in so many words, it says it's a self-diagnosing program, that I'm the only one that has to concede to my innermost self that I'm truly an alcoholic. And for me, I really have to pick apart, like, what exactly does that mean? And so we look at the medical community, and they still haven't found the gene, even though they say it's a family disease. You know, at this point, I feel it's a family disease more for the environment and passed on behavior than it is to a genetic predisposition. And I look at my own childhood, and I can see that I came from a lot of dysfunction and a lot of arguing. And my mother's a German war survivor. My parents were in continuous argument. My mother's a classic narcissist, and we were spanked and we were hit and we were put down and we were degraded and we were shamed and we were guilt tripped. And this isn't to blame my parents for my alcoholism. The stage that I'm trying to set is that I had such terrible self-esteem and I had no ability to process pain. There was never an environment where I could even talk about how hurt I am and come out the other end of things. We weren't taught any kind of communication skills where it was one person's turn and or somebody apologized or we cleaned things up because we didn't want to go to sleep in an argument. There was just arguing and arguing and arguing. And I come from three sisters and I'm the middle daughter, and my mother was a master at actually pitting her own children against one another. And you know what? I love my mom. She's actually right upstairs. She's very old and sick and not well. And again, this isn't to put her down. She did the best she could with what she had. And so that's how it's a to me anyway, is that the behavior, I look at my own childhood and I look at what I can't. You know, the average alcoholic does not know how to process their feelings. And so what happens for most of us is we wind up at a party or somewhere and somebody hands us a Budweiser and alcohol does for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. And you can look at the ecosystem of any family where they come from chaos and they come from drama and they come from trauma. And you can see that if there's three or four children in the family, not everybody turns alcoholic. Some of them have an A-type personality where they really want to control their environment and they have a lot of perfectionism stuff. Everything's folded, everything's clean, everything's promptly on time, every hair is straightened. And what lies underneath that is, if I control my environment enough, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. I can control myself right out of the chaos. You know, and then maybe somebody is a classic overeater where they just stuff and stuff and stuff feelings and they numb out at a very early age. And then you have us, the classic alcoholic. And, you know, in the book, it says, you know, things like we're noisy good fellows, or defiance is the outstanding characteristic of every alcoholic. We're attention seekers. Our ego is not our amigo. And what's actually also interesting psychiatrically is that the child that's screaming the loudest is still in touch with their feelings. And in the end, we are actually psychiatrically the most treatable because we're not out of touch with our feelings. We feel way too much and way too extreme, which in some ways, even though we're emotionally immature, it's going to be to our benefit and our advantage when we walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because there's at least something to work with and we're not completely 100% shut down. That doesn't mean that some alcoholics don't walk in completely shut down, but I would say for the most part, we're kicking and screaming and all about us. And I may not be much, but I'm all I think about, and I'm not being treated fairly. And I want your attention. And even though I can't love you, you better love me. And you can see that I don't have defects. I'm a defective character when I walk into the rooms of AA. And, you know, I feel most people relapse as a part of their story. Very few people walk into the rooms and get this the first time. And I do think that a lot of the problem with continuous relapse is that there's so much pain underneath that we're going to seek some kind of pain relief until we come out the other end and get ahead and have a bird's eye view of the wounded character and who we were, and not be swallowed up by what I would call untreated alcoholism, or my story, or the old character, or who I think I am, or run by my ego, or driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion and self-seeking. And there's just, for me, there's so much to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's so much to learn about the self and how the self operates, and who is the character that I brought here, and how did the character get built? You know, I can see that, and this isn't to be dismissive of anybody's tools in AA, but I can see that sometimes there's preconceived ideas where you'll get a sponsor and the sponsor will ask you to do a particular homework assignment, and the homework assignment happens to be what happened the first time you ever drank. And I think, whoa, what happened that made you want to get so drunk that you peed in your pants, lost your underwear, and had sex with strangers? Like, how did you wind up in this pitiful and incomprehensible, demoralizing pattern over and over and over again? Because I can look at the average person who winds up going to a party in their preteens or their teenage years, and they have an episode like we do, where they get so drunk that they vomit all over their friend's couch, and they pass out in a bathroom, and somebody can't get the door open, etc. And there's such healthy shame involved in this that they never do it again. And for the average alcoholic, my self-esteem was so poor, or I felt so badly about myself, that even the shame couldn't control the behavior, because I felt so sick and so small underneath. I felt so less than, that I really didn't care. On top of all that, most of us are depressed people. And on top of that, alcohol is a depressant. So if you weren't severely depressed, by the time you start drinking every day, you're going to get depressed, because it wipes out dopamine and serotonin and all the feel good hormones in the brain. You know, pouring sugar and liquor through the system over and over and over will just make a very angry, agitated, restless, irritable, and discontent character. So I look back at my behavior, and I can see that in the beginning, I did not cross over the invisible line. It says we lost the freedom of choice somewhere down the line. But when did we lose the freedom of choice? Most people don't know that exact day, because it's an invisible line. I do remember going to school and being in junior high and high school and wanting to achieve, wanting to be able to go on to college. Or it was Sunday and I had partied Saturday night and I have a hangover and I don't want to get drunk again. And I want to perform on Monday and I want to go to school and I want to still better myself. And I remember having a brake pedal where I wasn't just drunk around the clock, but somewhere towards the end of high school, I did cross over the invisible line. And I do remember being drunk every night of my life. I remember somewhere around 16 years of age, I remember every New Year's Eve, I would think to myself, I was drunk 365 days out of the year, even if I had the flu, even if I was sick, I was drunk. So I want to also look back at the character that was built. So I already have all of these childhood emotional defects in my character, where I really don't know how to get along well with others. My capacity to self-reflect or to own my part in something is very, very limited. My tendency is going to be more towards blaming people outside of me instead of owning and being able to look at my part, because like I said, I didn't have the capacity to look at my part. So I can see that I have childhood defects and childhood trauma. And then now I drink for years and years. And like I said before, there's so many pitiful and incomprehensible, demoralizing things. Like, I'm the true Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, literally, the car keys go, my underwear goes, I say and I think and I do and I behave in ways that I never normally would have. I really have a huge flip in my personality when I get a couple of drinks in me. And most alcoholics are not psychopathic and sociopathic. We actually do have moral fiber underneath, and we feel shame and we feel guilt and we feel incomprehensible, demoralizing, and we know right from wrong. So we wake up in the morning not only hungover, but also depressed from the alcohol. And then on top of that, just horrified and guilt-ridden because of what I've done with whatever. So I'm always trying to drown out and blot out what I did last night and last week. And then let's say I'm in a relationship. On top of that, I just sort of spray perfume on my behavior the night before and just try to move on and don't even know how to say I have so much shame, or I'm genuinely sorry, or I really need help. And, you know, I can see that there was so much under there, and if you really look at the subconscious mind and how it operates, it's not going to show me all of my pain in one fell swoop, or I'd probably blow my brains out. Walking into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or walking into AA and getting a sponsor, and thinking that I'm going to do a fourth and a fifth and an eighth and a ninth step and poof, be rendered white as snow, is a very unfortunate myth in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would never try to portray that as some kind of truth as I sit here and I speak and I share my experience, strength, and hope to everybody, because I've had to work very, very, very hard to get every painful episode out from the subconscious mind to the conscious mind, and then out to a place where I'm not captured by it, or it doesn't harm me and it doesn't hurt me. You know, there's so much that boils way down in the basement. And that's where we really need to get a relationship with God, is, you know, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So it's in the heart mind, it's down in my soul that I really want to have this psychic change. And so the myth, if I can call it a myth, is that if I just go to enough meetings, or I take some cotton out of my ears and I put some cotton in my mouth, I'm going to be saved. Or I do 90 meetings in 90 days, or I stick with a winner, or I get the right lineage with the right sponsor and the right grand sponsor and the right great grand sponsor, that then I will be saved. But really, truly, for me, there's one ultimate authority, and it's absolutely a loving God, as he expresses himself through the group and through me as an individual. So I can see that, you know, the first time I came to AA, I did the very best I could. You know, I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to a rehab. I spun dry. I did the steps to the best of my ability. And, you know, when it comes to the eighth and the ninth step and making amends and going and cleaning things up, there's also something that I think is very unfortunate, and that is when a sponsor isn't well versed in what a childhood wound is, and they have an idea that although Uncle Joe molested you, you still need to go make amends for him for hating him so much. And if we look at a psychiatric level to childhood and core wounds, we can see that the only true way, when you've been victimized by a perpetrator, is to actually get strong enough, and possibly even though this is not in AA steps, possibly even at some point confront the perpetrator and say, Uncle Joe, I want you to know how this affected me. And because that's not in the steps, I'm not going to bring that up and bring that to the table, because there's so much to talk about as far as truths and spiritual principles and the application of the 12 steps. But I want to clear away some of the myths so that I can have a clean slate and know what kind of sunlight to pour on that's going to make my garden grow, and what might be stagnation or actually bleach and make me go in the wrong direction. And so I can see that there's a lot of people that mean well, but they can't do well. And to even put myself in a position where a sponsor is now in charge of me and I am called their baby or their pigeon, very dangerous, very, very, very dangerous. And it doesn't talk about that in the big book. You know, I'm here to pass the AA baton along. I'm here to try and share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm here to transmit a message of depth and weight and hope through what I've been through as an individual, and not as any kind of authority for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I speak from my own experience, and Phil asked me to speak, so it's my 45 minutes. And if you don't like it, you know, there's 4,000 meetings a week in Los Angeles. Go get a resentment and a coffee pot and go somewhere else. And I don't say this from a mean place. I say this from, it's a wide open space and we can agree to disagree. You know, some people are very rigid and they just want everything in an exact way. Well, my sponsor said, and my sponsor's sponsor said, and sometimes they'll pass down material or ideas that haven't worked for even several generations. And so I know experientially what has fed my soul, and I speak from that place. And maybe even some people have an experience where they went and they made amends to the perpetrator that victimized them and they got a hit from it. I personally don't ever recommend it and don't think it's a good idea. And I take childhood wounds and how they turned into defects and those harms and how they discolored the pattern of our personality and our lives forever. And I take that into great consideration. I actually have a theory or very strong opinions about that. And because I did not cross over the invisible line right away, I look at my own patterns and I can see that I personally believe that I drank for the effect. And I drank because I couldn't think and act to good purpose and I couldn't function in this world and the lights were too bright and the pain was too deep. And I didn't even know how to walk into my house and deal with the ecosystem of my mother and my father and their continuous arguing and my mother always shaming and guilt tripping her own children. And so for me, I had to drink. I'm going to say this again, okay? When you come from a pattern like that, when you come from a really traumatic childhood, when you come from a painful household, we didn't have a choice. Alcohol became the solution, and it actually saved me from blowing my brains out. I really, really believe what I'm saying. I really believe that alcohol for the longest time saved me from not hanging myself from a tree in the backyard, from not taking a massive overdose. And then what happens is I take this personality that's already stunted and I take my drinking patterns out into the world and I, like a tornado, I blow through people's lives and I blow through jobs and I blow through all money and I blow through all kinds of stuff. And then at some point we hit a brick wall and come into AA. And like I said, the first time I did the very best I could, but I still suffered so deeply because there's a myth with 4 and 5 that you're just going to be rendered white as snow and you're going to walk on water. And it doesn't happen that way. I can't tell you how often I've actually heard somebody secretly break down and cry and say, I finished my 5th step and I thought I was going to get relief and I still feel like SHIT. And I say, welcome, because if it was such a perfect remedy, why would we even need to come back or do the steps again or continue to have so many problems with family at Christmas time, etc. So I, like so many other people, relapsed over and over and over. And at first I stayed very dry, so dry I could spontaneously combust, so dry I could start a forest fire. And I owned a home and I built a business for myself and I had a child and I still hated my mother and my sisters, hated my family. Sober member of AA, right below the surface, I could take a baseball bat and just like knock everybody's teeth out, and was ashamed to be in touch with that or let you know that that's really where I was at. But there's so much relief in actually allowing you in today and letting you know that that's where I was for so many years. So if you be a real alcoholic and you don't have a psychic change and you don't have a character change, the disease awaits at every woman's and man's elbow to resume its destruction and it awaits patiently. And there are some myths in AA and there are some truths. Let me tell you a truth. Finance and romance will take you out. And Bill Wilson talks so eloquently about the 3 primary instincts, my instinct for sex, my instinct for security, and my instinct for approval. And the sex and the approval instinct are all woven together. And then my instinct for security, finance and feeling okay, and a roof over my head, and am I making enough money, etc. And my my desire for these instincts to be treated far exceed their intended purpose, as it says in the 12 and 12. So I don't know how to get right sized and stay right sized. The instincts on rampage will balk at investigation, but they're always wildly, blindly driving me, as Bill Wilson says, unless I have a psychic change and I have a God consciousness and me and the new man walk hand in hand. So I have to see how self operates. And I didn't know what the self was. You know, all through the literature, it says we must be rid of the self or the selfishness or it kills us. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of our trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, step on the toes of my fellows, they retaliate. God, I offer myself to thee, build with me, do with me as I will, relieve me of the bondage of self. Any life run on self can hardly be a success. Constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show, make a decision to turn my will and my thoughts over to the care of God, come to believe that a power can restore me. So there's this lower self and this higher self that they talk about in the literature. But if I don't have a true experience with it, then I can't even speak from that place. And that's truly what being asked to share my experience, strength, and hope is all about. I would hope that the speaker would have had enough of a character change and a psychic change to be able to transmit a message. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. And I'm certainly not going to try to say that I walk on water. I still have defects just like anybody else in here. I can still go into hatred or frustration or big opinions, but I have a relationship with God and I have a power that I learned to tap into through prayer and meditation. And I'm always working to improve my conscious contact with this power that I choose to call God. So the second time that I relapsed, you know, Bill Wilson talks about, you know, out come the carpet slippers. I don't know. Some guy's got like a robe, you know, and looks real cool. And then the woman is just turns into a sea hag within 2 or 3 weeks. Anyway, you know, unrecognizable. So for me, that really was the truth. Like that second time around, I had a lot to lose and I had a child and I moved out into the streets and I lived in the street for 3 years. And I have 23 prostitution cases, 18 drug and alcohol related cases, 5 or 6 DUIs. I mean, really, like, alcohol was my master, and truly, there is no other place for me to ever land except Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous was downloaded into Bill and Bob exactly for people like me. I am a vodka jugging, bottle hiding, Dr. Jekyll, Mrs. Hyde, straight up freaking lunatic in your face, make a mess out of everything. Just don't even get me started. Rampage loony. And you know, the bottoms have trap doors and you go down further and further in the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I mean, you know, the prostitution and the breaking out in handcuffs, and that still doesn't stop you. And, you know, I mean, really, if you don't have a relationship with God and a psychic change, I don't know how this program's ever going to help you, because if you're just loitering with the intent to recover, it ain't going to happen. And let me tell you, and I don't say this from a mean place, if you don't want to be here, don't worry. You won't. And I had to make my life important to me. My grand sponsor, Bob Anderson, said, if my life's not important to me, he wouldn't make my life important to him. That there's something called the gift of desperation. And it's a present. It's a gift to be so desperate that I'm willing to do 90 meetings in 90 days, that I'm willing to get self-honest, that I'm willing to have an open mind and to download the idea that maybe, just maybe, I don't know anything, that through humiliation and a force feeding on humble pie, that I can get humble and be teachable. So I go in and out of jail and in and out of jail, and I'm in rehab over and over and over again. So many rehabs. The amount of money that they make off of us is just, it pisses me off. Anyway, that's a whole different topic. So I'm in rehab again, and somebody hands me these tapes by this guy named Bob Anderson. My home group is called Primetime. We have a website, primetimeisnow.com. I am not saying my home group's the be all end all. Like I said, you know, Yale or jail, Betty Ford, the back of a Ford. There's one ultimate authority. May you find this God now at any meeting, anywhere. I don't care if it's Tennessee or Kalamazoo or Los Angeles. The steps are there in a logical order form to produce a new character with no reference to the old, to, you know, to allow me to have a new way of life where I'm not run by untreated alcoholism. I'm not captured by self. I'm not, you know, smitten by an insane urge that's going to condemn me. So I get these tapes by this guy named Bob Anderson, and my friend handed me the tapes, and she looked at me and she goes, I don't think I can help you. I want you to listen to these tapes. And she looked at me and she said, and you don't know how to listen. And I thought, why is she even talking to me that way? She said, you don't know how to listen. I want you to listen and don't do anything else. Don't be distracted. Just listen to what this guy says and see if you can even listen. See if you can get through one tape without having your mind wander off or look at the clock or think about what's for dinner or do something different or peek at your phone or whatever. And so I took the homework assignment back with me and I tried to listen to the tape and I realized that she was right. I really, for the very first time, I realized that listening was an absolute spiritual principle, and I could see that I didn't have the capacity to listen all the way through. My mind would wander. Alcoholism is a wandering mind disease. And I realized that I didn't need alcohol to ignite my untreated alcoholism, that if I don't have a relationship with God and I'm not in the present moment treating my disease, then I'm talking to myself. And if the main part of the illness centers in the alcoholic's mind, well, then the mind is full of self. Then I'm just talking to the disease and the disease is talking to me with great authority. And it uses my voice and it uses my opinions and it uses the past and it uses the future and it uses my instincts and it uses my ego and any piece of material it can get its hands on. It just wants to distract me, and it'll let me know with great authority that the present moment isn't very important. I've got something else to talk to you about. And so I saw in the beginning that I really wanted to practice the art of staying present and being with this power. And that if I had to come to believe that a power could restore me, I had to see that the only restoration point was the present moment. Every day is the day I must carry the vision of God's will for me into all my activities. There's one that has all power. That one is God. May you find God now. It's always now. It's never then. It's an ism. It's never a wasm. There's no finishing line. I don't get to graduate. You know, constantly remind myself. If I'm constantly reminding myself I'm no longer running the show, then when is constantly? It wasn't yesterday. It wasn't last month or several years ago. It's right now. It's right here. It's right now that I'm either downloading a fourth dimensional God or I'm with self in my selfish, self-centered internal dialogue. And I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And the thing is always there trying to grab the steering wheel and distract me. So I look at the first and the second half of step one, and like this guy, Bob A, in the Primetime meetings would say, the first half of step one is the only part in all 12 steps that even talks about alcohol. The rest of it is all self-reflection and a psychic change. So powerless over alcohol, everybody that's in here, I think I looked at one point, it was like 105 people on. Anyway, you wouldn't be here on a Saturday night or a Saturday afternoon if you weren't powerless over alcohol. Hands down across the board, all of us have the phenomenon of craving. 6% of the population in the world are allergic to alcohol. The actual allergy response is that we drink more, and then we wind up with pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizing stuff. And for me, that's all the drunkalogue I really feel that you need from me. If we all have the phenomena of craving, then why do I need to tell you how many DUIs I had or how many times I lost my underwear or how many Christmas trees I peed on, etc.? You know, sometimes an old timer will say, because the newcomer needs to identify if you can just identify that we all have the phenomenon of craving, I think for me anyway, that's, it's pretty good base level. You know, hopefully I can bring something to the table because I have more space to not be talking about my yesterdays and more space to talk about what really helped to transform me and how the principles operate in the 12 steps and how I can apply them to the problems in my life or even to the present moment. So I look at the first half of step one, I'm powerless over alcohol, dash, there's a dash. My life is unmanageable. I used to think that my life was unmanageable. My life is unmanageable today, of me, by me, with me, for the rest of my life, one moment at a time, if I don't have a relationship with God, if I haven't come to believe that there's a power and I learn how to download this power and interact with this power and build a relationship with this power, you know, what am I doing here? I'm just loitering with the intent to recover. I think I'm going to get it through osmosis. And it doesn't go that way. You know, everybody in here knows somebody with double digit sobriety that's so dry they could blow the roof off. It's so dry, they got nothing that you want. And this thing is not about time. No offense to any old timer. Time is great, but it's not about time. It's about, there's one that has all power. That one is God. May we continue to find him, God now. And there's really nothing more beautiful than a newcomer on a pink cloud. And I tell that newcomer that's on a pink cloud, when the green is just so green and the sun is just so bright and the air smells so fresh, it's not a phase, that the pink cloud can be there forever, that there's something that's as accessible to the newcomer as it is to somebody with 20 years in this program that you can tap into now, right now, and another now, and another now. We don't have to wait until you get to the ninth step, wait until you've carried all 12 steps, wait until you get the right sponsor, wait until after a year, wait until this, wait until that. If having a relationship with God and treating your disease is in the present moment, then what can I do in the present moment to improve my conscious contact, to allow me to have a better moment or a better relationship with God? So I start to watch the thoughts that surf the waves of my brain, and the thoughts that surf the waves of my brain come from a subconscious level to a conscious level. And I think I'm so smart in the beginning, but then I start to really watch my thoughts and I can see that it's quite possible that every single thought that surfs of my, the waves of my brain might be infected with untreated alcoholism without a drink, I'm just like, selfish and self-centered and full of opinions, and I hate most people, and I don't like you, and I don't like this, and I don't like the way you said it, and my mind speaks to me with an incredible great authority, and it blocks me from having a relationship, it blocks me from having humility, it blocks me from having compassion, it blocks me from feeling forgiveness, it blocks me from having any love, it blocks me from having eye contact, it blocks me from the present moment, it blocks me from forgiveness. My mind and my opinions will block me from having any higher vibrational frequency that God would want me to be participating in or interacting with. God wants me to find a quiet, cozy place in the sunshine. And that's certainly not happening if I'm talking to myself. So I learned to wake up in the morning, and if I don't have a relationship with God, and I'm not in a program of recovery. I could be dry, I could be physically sober, but I'm not in a program of recovery. Like, what does it look like to be in a program of recovery? Well, I have to have a program of recovery. Well, what does a program of recovery look like? Well, it looks like any right life run on self is hardly going to be a success. So I wake up in the morning and I watch the thoughts that surf the waves of my brain. And if self is trying to mug me and trying to lynch mob me, I say, power, can you please protect me from my mind? Can you help me, God? Because my mind is trying to hurt me. My mind is trying to tell me something about the world, about my wrinkles, about the bathroom scale, about the state of affairs in the country, about Monsanto, about chemtrails, about inoculations, about Donald Trump, about China, about the ocean, about human beings, about Black Lives Matter, about whatever. My mind will just take anything and it'll just start spinning a spider web in there. And I prefer to have an open mind. But if I don't even know what it's like to have an open mind, then I don't really know what an open mind is, because this whole entire program is experiential. So I ask God, can you allow me to have an open mind? Can you just be with me? Can you help me be without any opinions today? Would you, God? And I seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. I'm more of a prayer than a meditator. And I start talking to the power all day long, and I stop talking to myself. So I begin to have an internal dialogue with God all day long, and I bring God with me everywhere, because I can't just pray with God for 5 minutes in the morning. My mind is incredibly active. I need a portable God. I need to take God to the bathroom with me. I need to take God into the car with me. I need to take God to work with me. I need to take God into the grocery store, into Starbucks, certainly on the freeway, certainly into an AA meeting. You ever want to get triggered? Like, just go to your home group, man. I'm triggered before I even get in there. Look at all these clowns in the parking lot. Not him, not her. You know, my biggest resentments, every time I've ever written a resentment list, is always back into AA. It's somebody in AA that's bugging me. So as I build this relationship with God, I can see that I'm coming to believe that a power can restore me. And as I believe that a power can restore me, it's so much easier to go into step three and to make decisions to turn my will and my thought life over to the care of this God as I understood him in step two. I understood it, I understood. It's understood that this is a power for my life. God is infinite. It's an infinite source of power. As I grow spiritually, the power expands for me. It does for me what I could never do for myself or with self. So the new character in the beginning is this big, and the old character is this big. The God consciousness is this big, and the old character is this big. Eventually, the God consciousness gets bigger, and the old character gets smaller. And I'm able to see from a bird's eye view what bothers me, my hurts, my harms of yesterday, my opinions, you know. And as I go through the steps and I improve my conscious contact, and I continue to seek through prayer and meditation, and I pray defects out of my system, I ask things like, God, can you help me be more patient? Could you help me be more loving? Can you just place me in a position of neutrality with so-and-so that I hate? You know, a lot of times God doesn't necessarily put love there, but it puts the nothingness there where I have an open mind about the situation. The thing or the person doesn't bother me. But then as the years go on, I can see that there are some episodes from my childhood, from the past, that don't seem to get completely lifted out. This is where, for me, core trauma wounds stay. And this is something that I'm very passionate about, is that what's still stuck in there, and how can we now get that out of there? Because I think that sometimes people have shame with double digit sobriety or 20 or 30 years, or they might not be in touch with their abandonment issues or their mother issues or their father issues or their violent issues, because maybe their sponsor didn't have the excavating tools to go down into the basement and to pull it up. And so God's constantly disclosing more to you, to me. Ask him in my morning meditation, and I start to see what's still down there. And it makes me want to go for more. It makes me want to excavate. It makes me want to see what's still blindly, wildly still driving me, what I could still cry over, what I'm still really angry about, what I'm still hurt about. And there is no finishing line. If God or the program showed us everything we were up against the day we walked into AA, I would just put a loaded gun to my head. I could not have swallowed and digested the unpalatable truth that I'm going to be excavating for 17 years and still not be done with it. But it's a lifelong journey, and God wants me to continue to grow in his likeness. And we don't reach enlightenment. It says, I'm the educational garden variety alcoholic, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. So as time goes on, hopefully my mind is opening and more defects get a light shined on them. And I continue to offer these defects to God, and God replaces that with intuitive guidance that I know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. I mean, holidays are still a big one for people, and the holidays are upon us. A lot of times people still can't be around family members because that's the ecosystem that created most of the triggers. Now, that's really nice to know now, because it gives me permission to feel like crap if I feel like crap, or to go in there and to go, oh, I see, you know, I'm not rendered white as snow, and that I can learn how to navigate and tiptoe around things. And I learn how to tread lightly and be careful with this. And it says that I can meet calamity with serenity, that I can, through intuitive guidance, through intuition and through inspiration and through enthusiasm, I can download God. And when I'm intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me, to be quite honest, 9 times out of 10, what that looks like is shut your mouth and be the observer. I don't have this big bag of genius tricks with all kinds of intellectual dialogue where I just learn how to navigate through some shitstorm with a bunch of family members. I just sit back and watch the monkeys go. You know, I just don't participate. I don't open my mouth and do and say something that I'm going to regret later, or that's going to put more, you know, gasoline on the fire. I try to just chill out and back off. And that's most of the time where God wants me to be, is just be the observer. Y'all don't have to like me. My family doesn't have to like me. I want an authentic relationship with God. God loves me so much today that God gave me the desperation to come over and over and over again. God gave me the willingness to improve my conscious contact with God. God gave me the desire to get up in the morning and to pray and to meditate and to read the literature and to take commitments and to work with others. I don't want to burn out. I love AA. And I do believe that even my willingness, self isn't doing, that's even a free and an undeserved gift. Self couldn't do any of this. She'd be somewhere else at some popularity contest or trying to make $1 million or anything, but speaking for Tennessee at 5 o'clock in my mother's living room on a cell phone to people I don't know for fun and for free. Who wants to do that? And do I even have anything to transmit? But I allow God to continue to work through me. And like it says, great events continuously do come to pass. And it's not that I won the lottery and I'm a millionaire. It's that I'm rich on the inside. It's that I really know that there's a power that loves me today, and that I don't seek human approval. Y'all don't have to love me. You don't have to believe in me. You don't have to like me for me to be okay. It's all right. It's all right, even if you hate me. It's okay. I get it. Alcoholics are full of hatred and disgust and confusion, and they have the total inability to form a true partnership. If I'm triggering you, welcome, you know, welcome to AA. I need to see that. Okay, 46. I got a couple more minutes. I need to see that that's how the self runs. If I don't have a relationship with God, that I bristle when someone shares, that I don't necessarily like people, but God makes it possible. God makes the love in my heart and the forgiveness in my heart possible. And when I look at step three, and that I'm willing to turn my will and my thoughts over to the care of God as I understood him, it's a continuous relationship. It never stops. It continues to grow. And, you know, I have a good life today. I had a daughter that I didn't see for 3 years in the street, and we're close. We talk on the phone every day. My mom, I was written out of her will. Now I'm the executor to it. You know, I never had a key to this house ever, ever, ever in Laguna. Now I sit here and I take care of her. You know, I'm here on the beach. I mean, I was the horrible alcoholic, dope fiend, lunatic that everybody ran from. Don't invite her. We can't stand her. You know, get her out of here. And self couldn't have done this. I didn't do this. God did this. The spiritual principles in application did this to me, for me, with me. I allowed self to be moved out of the way, and God began to download in me. And
I have compassion and I have love and I have forgiveness where I had none. I'm easy to get along with my mother. She doesn't trigger me anymore. I see my siblings. They cannot be in a room with her for even 5 or 10 minutes without one of them going, oh my God, did you see that? And I don't get triggered anymore. She's merely interesting. She's just an unbelievable Germanic Petri dish science project. I love her, but I don't like her behavior. She's cruel and she's mean and she doesn't love her children, but it doesn't hurt me anymore. I'm so grateful that I'm able to see her in her last part of life and have forgiveness and compassion for her. It's a huge gift. I didn't have that with my father. He passed away and I still hated his guts. With my mom, we're good. Thank you, God. At least one parent is going to leave this planet and I'm going to be okay with it. I'm going to be more than fine with it. That alone is such a gift in AA. You know, like I said before, we're not rendered white as snow. And just because I did a bunch of writing or I did a fifth step or I looked at my part in anything doesn't mean that the core pain isn't lifted. You know, the issues in the tissues, it's in you at a cellular level. We hear these stories of somebody who was on a donor list and they needed a heart or a kidney or a liver. And they received this random organ. And sometimes they start to have feelings or thoughts or memories from the recipients, from the donor's body. And this is not uncommon. Why? Because the memory of our life isn't in my brain. It's in my tissue. It's everywhere. It's in me at a cellular level. It's in me through and through. And it doesn't just lift because I look at my part. I can look at my part all day long. I know I was an a-hole, but it still doesn't create forgiveness and it doesn't create love or an open space where I can be teachable. You know, self has to really be moved out of the way and the work has to continuously be done. And God makes that possible. And sometimes miraculously something is lifted and other times I have to scrub and scrub and scrub away the stain that it just seems like it's never ending. It's always there. But I know that every time I pray and meditate to improve my conscious contact with God in a particular defect or in a particular story, it is slowly getting lifted. It is slowly getting wiped away that the load is getting lightened and that I am becoming more and more in the likeness of my creator, that the bag isn't so heavy to carry anymore. You know, the road gets narrow. I don't have a secret life, you guys. I don't have this secret, weird, psychotic, like gambling, pornography, chocolate cake, burning, cutting, scratch card life. My life is probably pretty boring to most people. I have a private practice. I have my daughter. I have some friends. I have AA. I take care of my mother. That's it. You know, it's small and it's narrow and it might be even boring to you. I like it because I don't want a lot of hoopla in my life. Excitement isn't a good vibration for alcoholics. Quiet, flatlined, nice and mellow, silence for me, you know, just a nice life where self isn't running the show, where the drama isn't always at the forefront, where I don't have some big story or some narrative going on in my head. And I really, my peace becomes my most valuable asset. If I don't have peace in my life and in this present moment, I don't have a program of recovery. I want my peace and I value it to the point where I even cut people out of my life. I'll delete them from my phone. I don't have a big enough God to handle the relationship and I'll move aside. I'll get rid of them. You know, like I said, I don't think I'm a saint, you know, and I'm not a saint. I work very, very hard for my peace. I work very hard at my relationships. And, you know, sometimes I'm a spiritual schizophrenic. You don't know if you're going to get the old character or the God consciousness, but I stay and I remain in a program of recovery. And the world is certainly a better place with me in AA and not out there driving behind the wheel, you know, with a bunch of beers in the car. Anyway, I think I'm pretty much out of time and I want to thank the group and I want to thank Phil for asking me to come share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm going to wrap it up with that. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.